out like tonight when George was trying to pass that traffic and KI-4DOS Gabriel over there in Easley said he would take it. And George was having a problem hearing Gary. I could pick up a word every once in a while. But what had happened, one end of Gabriel's antenna was on, his dipole was on the ground. I don't see how in the world Gary was able to receive that traffic, because I was like you, Chad. I could not hear it.
It's just when I hear him handle traffic, he's able to pick it up and move with it. Now, I will say that's where experience comes into play. He's done it so much that he can pick it up and just move and go with it. I'm just learning how to handle traffic and get everything down on the form and get the codes right. But the other night I was trying to pick up a piece of traffic from George, and every time he would start to give me the information, there would be a lightning crash somewhere in the state, and it would take away, you know, his first two words. And that's a struggle for me, because when I start writing things down and I miss something, that stops me in my tracks. And I have got to figure out a way to put what I've missed behind me and focus on what's coming in that I can hear and get it written down. So I think it may be a combination of the noise that I'm having to try to fight through and not getting hung up when I miss something, and continue just to write something down on the information that I can hear. But what happens is I feel like the band conditions change as I'm listening. In other words, some nights it's not a problem, but I can set the radio up to filter some of the noise out and have a pretty good listening to where I can listen to the traffic. But it's like 10 minutes later, or sometimes it's 20 minutes later. It's kind of like something is changing with the conditions, and I can't be fiddling around with trying to filter the radio out in the middle of accepting traffic. That just, I just can't do that. So I go back to my original question. Is the noise a problem for you, or is it, I mean, I know you haven't heard my station, but some nights do you struggle with noise? I guess that's a better question to ask.
Yes, and I have no problem receiving your transmission up there, Chad. But it is the atmospheric conditions with all these storms and all. This morning, I always check into the South Cars Net on 7.251 on 40 meters. And a lot of those net controllers are down in Florida. But they had pretty sunshiny weather down there on the east coast of the state. I could copy those stations all right, but on the Gulf side, the storm was coming in. Where it already been in is leaving. And I couldn't hear nothing. And looking at my meter, I had a zero noise floor. I mean, no noise at all. And then when they were transmitting, I could hear just a little bit. But but the meter was not moving at all. There's nothing wrong with your station, Chad. It's just handling traffic. It's like when you gave you the advice on being that control up there for the transthermal net. It's like learning Morse code. If you're sitting there trying to copy and you miss a letter and you start thinking about, trying to figure out, well, was it dot, did I, or did da-da, and while you're doing that, you've done missed two or three letters afterwards. But it just takes practice, practice, practice. And you'll get to where if you miss a letter, you can look at, usually you look at the paper after you've got through with the message and figure out what the word was and what letter you missed and fill it in. But I am thinking seriously about, they've been looking for a net control on the sideband net. And I've contacted George and Roger down there, and they've sent me the emails. I just got to get a printer up and going. And I'm thinking about being net control there on that day. But like tonight, I told them all I had was 100 watts and a wire antenna up. And George said, don't worry about it. Said, we've always got somebody here that'll help relay. So I'm thinking about it. I hadn't told them I would, but I'm thinking about becoming a net controller on the sideband net. I'm just waiting to see how my health problems work out here and how much money I spend at the Shelby Ham Fest. And I don't know, I'm going up there, I ain't looking to buy nothing. I know I ain't going to be able to buy an amplifier. But I might see a pretty telegraph key I want. That's about all I'm going for, except try to meet people I've talked to on the radio. But, Chad, it's just, buddy, you just going to have to, don't worry about the words you miss and asking them to repeat. They know you're new, and they'll take time with you. It's not bothering them. They're just glad you're there to handle the traffic.
KI4DOS. KK4JBQ. KK4JBQ. Break.
For JBQ, I don't think KI4DOS is still in here tonight. This is K4OIM.
Walt, I had Gary on my mind. And I swear, I've never done that before, given somebody else's call sign. I apologize for that. It's KK4JBQ. I have a recommendation for Chad, and it does involve Gary. Well, I understand that quite often Gary uses a headset. Now, you might not believe it, but there's a lot of distraction whenever you're listening to the radio. I just had a cat scratching on my leg, and it distracted me. But when you have a closed back headset on, that is to say, it's not also, you have the sound in your head, and it's easier for you to separate the noise in the atmosphere. It's always going to be there, and the voice. It's easier to separate. And that's one thing. And the other thing, I'm trying to learn CW as well, Walt. And I took classes where the method used to teach it was to write everything down. And I had a real problem with that. to keep up with the code as it was sent, I would miss a few letters. And by the time I wrote that down, figured it out, wrote that down, they were already three or four words long. At 18 words a minute, which is where we were trying to learn. The best thing to do is to head copy. Copy it in your head. It's a bit more of a struggle, but that's the only way for those higher speeds. Anyway, Chad, I hope that helps. A closed back headset. What do you think? KK4JBQ.
Larry, thanks for the info, and you're exactly right. So here's what happens on my end is I get, it never fails. I love my father to death, and I'd do anything for him, but he lives on the other side of the farm, and he's got this little Kubota that he rides around on and checks on the goats and all this. I won't see him all day, but for some reason, it just seems like every single time I get in the middle of trying to take a piece of traffic, he comes right in and just the least little bit of distraction. And I mean, it doesn't take much. A dog barking or the Kubota driving by or dad coming in and, you know, he's dad, he just comes in, doesn't knock or anything, and I don't, you know, that doesn't bother us, but, you know, when you're in the middle of taking a piece of traffic and, you know, your dad comes in and says, hey, that's it. I mean, it's over. And when you combine that with noise on the high frequencies or a dog barking or a cat scratching, it's just frustrating, and like I said, I got a set of cheap headphones here that I picked up at the Ham Fest. They're not much. They're about the cheapest things you can buy, and they're 20 years old at that, but I've had to start doing that, but I think I'm going to have to get some better headphones to where I can just tune everything out, because it just takes everything I've got to get a piece of traffic down, because they go so fast, and I feel like I just frustrate them to no end when I ask them, you know, well, I miss this or I miss that. Matter of fact, the other night, we tried three times, and George finally just says, hey, look, you're going to have to call me on the cell phone. Well, that's not the point. The point of this is to do it on the radio and learn. Let me let this repeater cycle. When you're assigned a task, let's say washing the car, that's the task. But there's a lot of implied tasks that come with that. So if you're going to wash the car, then you need to get a bucket. You need to get water, soap, a rag, blah, blah, blah. There's a whole bunch of other things that you got to do before you can actually wash the car. So, and that's what I'm learning with the piece of traffic. I'm gonna pass this piece of traffic. But there's a lot of things that I need to be able to do to pass that traffic. I need to be comfortable on the radio. I need to be able to hear, obviously. And I need to be able to change the radio settings as the propagation changes. And when you combine that with barking dogs or dads coming in or cats scratching, it's just like I can't move fast enough sometimes. And I'm going to do this. It might take me 2 years to learn how to do it, but I'm going to do it. And it sure is frustrating. And you're exactly right. I may need to, invest in some decent headphones so that I can tune everything out, because there's a distraction everywhere I turn, and that just frustrates me to no end. KL4NUE for station ID.
There's one other thing I might suggest. A good closed back headset is, it can be expensive. So another thing that's almost as good is some earbuds. What radio are you going to be using to do this?
Yaesu 991A.
So what is the... do you have a quarter inch or a 3/8 inch output for audio?
That the jack plugs into looks like about an eighth of an inch, so it's a small pin headphone.
You're set. It's likely the jack that we're talking about here, the eighth inch jack, could be mono, could be stereo. The only way to know that is to plug some earbuds into it and see if you get the same thing in both ears, and that would be ideal. And all earbuds are not made equal. Of course, there's some that seal a little better. Some come with different interchangeable gummy parts that go into your ears, if you know what I mean, and just get them to fit nice and snug, and it will isolate you from these distractions. That's the least expensive approach I can think of. KK4JBQ.
I'll definitely make some changes there, because it's a struggle, but I was so frustrated night before last, I just turned the radio off and just had to quit, because I just felt like I couldn't keep up, and that's very frustrating. But that's okay. I got your advice, and I'll take it. Okay, Walt, so I got one more question for you, and it's a quickie, and Larry or anybody else. So here's my question. What does it mean when somebody says the band is dead? I think I know the answer to that, but I'm not exactly sure. So here's what I'm experiencing, and I can't give you a specific frequency, because it's not the same frequency all the time. It depends on what time of the day it is. But sometimes I can jump up to, say, 40 meters or 20 meters or whichever one I'm trying to listen in or make contact on a station with. And when I jump up to the frequency that I'm authorized to transmit on, I don't hear anything. No static, no noise, no voice. It's like the radio is muted. But I can come back 8 hours later, and there's a noise floor there, and there's static there, and I can pick out people trying to talk and this, that, and the other. So is that what it means when I hear somebody say the band is dead, or somebody try to explain that to me, please?
UEK40IM. Chad, the first thing I do in the morning when I come down here and turn the radio on, I turn the computer on, and I go to the Google website, and it automatically comes up on my computer up there at the top is the QRZ website. I'll click on it, and it's got a propagation report on there. And it'll tell you what bands are open and what bands are closed or dead. And according to that, for a long time now, all the UHF, VHF channels are dead, or closed. And the only thing open is, it'll say 80 meters is good now, 40 meters is good now, 20 meters is closed or dead. There's nothing wrong with your radio. If you want to go above 40 meters on HF, you're going to have a set of beams. I mean, that's the only way out of it, because I'm stuck in the same situation you are. Well, almost. I got a set of Cushcraft A3 2015 and 10 meter beams up there I've had for almost 2 years and ain't got them up yet. I've even thought about selling them. But another dumb thing I have done, forgetting that you are a relative new ham, is you being a net handling traffic and all, and checking into these nets on the HF. Every net controller I know of, or anybody I know handling traffic, they have an SDR dongle plugged into their computer that they are listening to. Because in the morning on South Cars, some of the net controllers, I'll check in and they'll say, wait a minute, let me go to my SDR. And they can hear me on the SDR no matter what kind of antenna they got. Like this morning, Florida, I couldn't even check in. I had to wait till Brian picked up in West Virginia. And the only way he could hear me was on the SDR. So if you're going to handle traffic, you're going to need one of those SDR dongles, and they're not that much. And we're $20 to $50. And I've got two of them here. I'm just not smart enough to figure out how to program the doggone things. I've got two. One of them I give $30 for, and I got one, the SDR, I mean the original one, I gave about $52 for, that came with about three different antennas to handle UHF, VHF, HF, and it supposedly it picks up air traffic controllers, all kind of stuff. But most of them guys handling traffic, they've got one, Chad, K4OIM. Back to you, Chad.
That sounds like to me they're cheating a little bit. And that kind of hurts my feelings a little bit, because here I am thinking, man, you know, I'm struggling trying to pick all this out of the noise and this, that, and the other. You telling me that there's a possibility that some of them have a software-defined radio listening to a much clearer conversation than I'm listening to, that's cheating. I mean I was always taught in the military, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. But that may explain a lot there. I don't think Gary uses one, but that would explain a lot with the net controllers, because they, that helps me out a lot.
I tell you, George had one tonight, because he would have never heard Gary. As close as I am, and you are to easily, and we couldn't hear Gary. I guarantee you, yeah, everybody, I've been on here a long time, and every net controller on the HF I know of, they run a SDR radio of some kind, and KB4, JBQ, Larry, I didn't mean to leave you out. Back to you, Larry.
Well, KK4, JBQ, there's a couple of things that I should get out there and you should understand. HF is different than VHF in a couple of ways. The way we use VHF, since it is line of sight, practically speaking, and depending on the terrain, it might not cover 5 miles. Now, I'm about 36 miles from the repeater that we're using right now. And the reason is that I'm higher with the terrain that I'm sitting on. I'm higher than the average terrain around me. So I get a very good connection to the repeater. With HF, you are using the ionosphere that encircles the planet. It's a layer of the atmosphere, somewhere around 200 miles up. And during some portions of the day, that ionosphere is going to work better. It is energized by the sun. So there are some bands that need to reflect from the ionosphere, and others that not so much. Your longer wavelengths, like 40 and 80 meters, they're best at night. 20 is good around the clock. And the higher frequencies, it just goes right through the ionosphere in the daytime. In the nighttime. So the atmosphere is working for you and working against you, depending on the band you're using and the time of day. And then there's, Walt, you were right, that propagation report is so easy to interpret, and it's very helpful. There's another thing called the maximum usable frequency. Some bands, like 80 meters, are so wide. First of all, it's difficult to get one antenna that'll cover all of 80 meters. You have to cut it and tune it for the section of that band that you wish to operate on. You can't operate on one antenna and do CW as well as voice. It's just physically impossible. The SDR dongle, I don't know if you call that cheating. A lot of people would say that FT8 is cheating because it's purely digital. This is a fun hobby because of all of the things that are interactive one with another. Everything always matters. Anyway, thank you for... I'm just hanging out and really enjoying this, Walt. What a marvelous idea you've had. And Chad, you are a wealth of questions, I must say. When I began this hobby over 10 years ago, I just listened to what everybody said. I read everything I could. I watched every YouTube video that seemed to apply to things I didn't know. And so you pick up little things and you put it in your bag and you charge forward with it. This is something we enjoy. Now, Chad, you have taken on quite a responsibility and challenged yourself. That's a great thing. But you will have to struggle a little bit and add time and educate yourself. And we all owe a great thank you to Walt for thinking up this round table. Good for you, Walt. KK4JBQ.
Thankful. I mean, I understand that with anything that you do in life, there's amount of struggle that comes with it. There's also a time to blossom after you've been through those struggles and you put some experience under your belt. However, there is a way to cut some of that struggle out, and that is to utilize all of your resources, which is people like you and people like Walt, who will take the time to answer the questions and help somebody to work through some of the struggles. You know, so I understand as an apprentice, let's say I'm the apprentice here, that it's difficult for people who have knowledge to get in a public forum and say, well, this is what you need to do, because there may be somebody else 60 miles away saying, no, that's not what you need to do. You need to do this. So that complicates things, because nobody who wants to be a mentor and teach the apprentice wants to hear that or cause conflict with other experienced operators. So I guess what I'm trying to say, I understand men having the knowledge that you got, how that can be complicated trying to help somebody who doesn't have as much knowledge as myself, because of them, you know, you're putting your answers out in public forum. I get it. I do. But I'm also putting myself out there as an apprentice and saying, I'm not afraid to ask the questions. And there may be some people out there saying, well, this is the stupidest guy I've ever met. But I'm not ashamed to ask the questions, because I will guarantee you, both of you, there's somebody listening to this conversation going, hey, he's asking some pretty good questions, and I'm afraid to get on there and ask these questions, because I don't want to put myself out there in public. But at the end of the day, this is the only way I'm going to learn. So I'm going to take the information that y'all have given me, and Daniel and has given me tonight, and I'm going to digest that, and I'm going to figure out a way to start using it, and then I'm going to put it into my routine, and that's going to make me better, when all I had to do was just ask and not worry about what other people think. So to shorten this up a little bit, I appreciate y'all taking the time and putting yourself out there to help me to learn, because there's not many men who will do that nowadays. And I understand that, and I respect it, but I also appreciate it very much. Y'all don't know how much I appreciate it, because when you flounder and struggle, and there's no change, and I know both of you have been there, that is extremely frustrating. But if I can just lean forward just a little bit, when you add all those little bits up, it ends up being something that's worth measuring. So I appreciate that for both of you, and y'all just don't know how much I appreciate it. So I just want to make sure y'all understand that, and Larry, I appreciate you hanging by, and Walt too, being up so late, because I don't know if any two men at 10:30 is going to listen to some guy they don't even know ask a bunch of crazy questions. but I do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
I will indeed.
NUE and KK4 JBQ. This is for both of you. The reason I started this roundtable is because of people like you, Chad. These guys and girls that just got their ticket. And once you study that book and get that technician ticket, a month or two later, you done forgot everything you learned in that book. And even though you learned about the length of antennas and all of this, about ground wave propagation and all of that, you forget it. And a lot of you are saying, I don't have an Elmer. And that's why I started the roundtable discussion, is because, like, last week, Dave, W4DJW, and I forgot who else stuck in here. Oh, KI4DOS, they stuck around and didn't even know they were in there until somebody asked questions. And I didn't know Larry was in the background. I didn't know Daniel was in the background tonight, but thank both of you for being here. And Andy, that man is a wealth of information. I am really glad Andy stuck around tonight. And that's what the whole roundtable discussion is about. So back to you, Larry.
KK4JBQ. One thing that I forgot earlier, it's useful information, and it applies to part of the conversation that's, I hope everybody can remember it. There was something about not being able to hear certain people. I think it was in the conversation about the SDR dongle. When you're using an antenna, it's helpful to know just how that thing works. When the RF energy is propagated, leaves the antenna, even if it's a wire, it heads toward the horizon at a given angle, largely depending on its height above ground. If it's a full half wave length above ground, and that will change, of course, for the band that it's useful on, then its most useful, the longest propagation will be at about 5 degrees on the horizon. And that'll get you across oceans of distance. But it puts most of its energy out for a far reach if it's at half wave. If that antenna is lower to the ground, the signal is going more up toward the sky. Finally, to the point where it's shooting the energy straight up. And I have heard that some people do that on purpose, so that they can reach people that are within 1,000 miles of them. That's not unimportant. If you want to reach somebody from 500 to 1,000 miles away, a neighboring state, for instance, if you're doing a worked all states or something like that, they will never hear you if your antenna is where it ought to be for DX. Those antennas that are lower than a half wave will propagate something called near incident sky wave. So it goes up, it's almost straight up, but it comes down at an angle too. And so if you want to contact people within 1,000 miles of neighboring states, then a lower antenna is very helpful. There is, for the antenna cut for DX work, a skip zone. And it just, the signal goes right over the top of the destination you might want and comes down thousands of miles away. What's in that from your antenna to the 1,000 miles away, that's called the skip zone. And none of your signal energy is going there. KK4JBQ.
If I got this, but let me take 40 meters for example. So you're saying that half a wavelength, my antenna needs to be a half a wavelength high. Is that half of 40 meters, or is that the actual frequency as far as the height goes, because the tip of my antenna, it's a dipole in a V configuration. The tip of it is at 60 feet, but it comes down in a vertical V, probably about 5 feet off the ground from there. So how do I determine how high the antenna needs to be, I guess is what I'm asking.
There, if you look into, and it's difficult in a forum like this to explain every little detail, but if you look into the subject of propagation and antenna design, a flat top dipole, you know what a sine wave is. You can start on one end and of your dipole, and you make the first half of the wave. If it's a center fed dipole, that waveform will come back down and pass through the feed point. And then it's on the other part of the cycle. A sine wave is a full cycle. So it comes through the center, dips down, comes back up. That's a full sine wave. If the antenna is lower than a half wave height above ground, then that waveform will be changed. If the feed point is off-center, like a Carolina wind might be, that waveform changes. The waveform is how can I say this? There are two elements that's working in your antenna. One is voltage, and the other is current. So when it passes through the center with a full wave dipole, or I'm sorry, a half wave dipole, when it passes through the center, it's going through zero at the feed point and coming back up. It's going to maximum voltage at the tips and maximum current at the feed point. So it's fascinating, and it's hard to explain because I'm trying to draw a picture with words here. It's difficult. But that's the trick. And if you look this up, propagation in a half-wave dipole, that will explain a lot when you understand where the propagation occurs greatest at the maximum point of the current. That's the energy that leaves the antenna. That's the propagated energy. Did that help? KK4JBQ.
There's enough tidbits in there for me to... Yesterday I stumbled across a calculator on the internet, that you can put in what type of antenna you have and some other specifics. I've got the cut sheet here, or the cheat sheet on my antenna. So I'm thinking now that, you know, when I saw the calculator, I'm thinking, well, you know, it's not really important. I mean, you know, an antenna is an antenna. But hearing what you got to say, yeah, that might be pretty important. And so I'll go back and look at that calculator, because I'm pretty sure there were 4 or 5 entries for specific data, and one of those entries was height to gain the MUF, or maximum propagation, something like that. I can't remember the specifics of the calculator, but you've told me enough to where I probably need to go back and revisit that. So yeah, that was useful, very useful. Enough information for me to go and take a second look. So one other thing I want to tell you and Walt is that when, let me let this repeater cycle. When I was in Iraq on the second deployment, we went to Saddam Hussein's main palace in near Al Asad Air Base. And it was the most magnificent thing I think I've ever seen as far as the structure goes. Solid marble, alabaster columns, 3 stories built out of solid marble. I don't think there was a piece of wood in the place. Hand-carved ceilings. I mean, I think it was 12,000-15,000 square feet, huge columns, solid alabaster, just surrounded by a 20-acre pond that Saddam had his fish in. Well, as you enter the main palace, there's a bathroom on the right when you go in through the main palace. And inside the bathroom, most Arabic toilets, you don't sit down like you do in America. You stand and do your number. But this particular room, solid alabaster walls now, white marble, was a toilet that you sit on that was made of, I'm not sure it was solid gold, but the whole toilet was gilded in gold. A gold lid, gold tank, gold bowl, everything. It looked like an American toilet, but it was solid gold. And I thought to myself, well, that's really weird. I mean, why in the world would you, you know, when you use a toilet, you're there for one thing, and, you know, what difference does it make what kind of material it's made out of? Let me let this repeater cycle. Well, we'd been there, I don't know, a couple of hours, I guess, and me and a couple of other soldiers were talking, you know, about this toilet, and it dawned on me that sometimes there may be something there that you're not seeing, that somebody else has figured out, or that somebody else knows that you don't. And if it's not going to do any harm, then try it. So I got enough gumption up, and I said, hey, you know, I'm here, it's now. How many other times are you going to get an opportunity to sit in somebody like Saddam Hussein's house and sit on his toilet? So I did. I took the opportunity, and, I mean, I had to use the bathroom. Why not? So thinking that this was the craziest thing in the world, you know, what difference difference does it make? And let me tell you, it made a difference because that was the most comfortable toilet I've ever sat on in my life. I don't know whether it was psychological or it just was something about the gold, I guess. I'm not sure exactly what it was. But my point to this whole conversation is that sometimes other people have knowledge or information about things that you may not think is important, or that it's just something that you're afraid to try or afraid to ask or do. And I've learned over the years that if it doesn't cause any harm, there's obviously a reason for it. So give it a shot. Give it a try. So I did. And I ain't gonna lie to you, I enjoyed it. I don't enjoy much on the toilet, but I did, because it was his toilet and it was made out of gold. So I appreciate that little bit of information. And that, you know, like I said, sometimes other people know things that you don't, that you miss in the details. And I can carry the brunt of this learning curve, but there's some gaps there. And if y'all can just help me with some of those gaps sometimes, then that's enough. And I really appreciate it. So with that, I appreciate both of you very much. This is Kilo Oscar 4, November Uniform Echo, and I'm gonna call it quits for the night, fellas. But I'm gonna say I'm clear on y'all's final. And Walt and Larry, thank you so much for sticking with me and helping me tonight.
4JBQ. One thing, just before you leave there, Chad, make sure I got it. The best teacher, Elmer, probably relies on the wisdom of others as much as he does his own. So I'll refer you to someone, a YouTube channel, someone who is very good at modeling antennas. His business is actually producing a commercial antenna. He's an Englishman, lives over in England. So he speaks your language, and his channel is DX Commander. That's two words, DX Commander. You look up his YouTube channel, and if you click on the videos tab, you'll get all the videos, and he's got hundreds. But select one where he's explaining modeling antennas. And he's very entertaining. He's downright funny. He's a little strange. He cuts his hair in a mohawk, but he's terribly intelligent. His antennas are purchased by people all over the world, and you learn a great deal. I have, in just watching his channel, and as I say, he's highly entertaining. So with that, I wish you a good night, and get some good rest. It's always good to have a good night's rest. KK4JBQ.
JBQ. Larry, thank you for coming back for that. I've watched these videos, and I sit and laugh and laugh and laugh at DX Commando. But for any antenna to work, an inverted V, first of all, is for somebody that don't have the property to put a flat top antenna up on. But I don't think you'll ever get an inverted V to work as good as a flat top and get the full wave configuration Am I correct, Larry?
Walt, I'll put it this way. Every single antenna is compromised in some way. An inverted V does offer you an opportunity to put a 40-meter antenna in a space that you just could not get one if you strung it out flat top. Also, if you can get some height for the vertical part of it, and then just drop or you use up a lot of the length in just going vertical, and then flat top. That's an inverted L. That has some properties that are useful also. But having a limited area to put up an antenna is a problem a lot of people have. And these various configurations, such as inverted V or inverted L, it gives you an opportunity to get something in the air. And I've heard it said quite often that any antenna is better than no antenna. KK4JBQ.